You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas by the Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont.
And we're delighted that you're with here. Us again this week for episode 134, and you will be able to pick it up as a podcast immediately following this show, and in about 24 hours up on Spotify and Amazon Music and such. And we're delighted to have you with us to meet tonight's special guest,
Mark Edward Langley.
And here's Mark. Hello, Mark.
How you doing?
Oh, we're delighted to have you with us, Mark. Where are you joining us from?
Right now I am in Northwest Indiana.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So let's see. We went and watched that movie the other night, Twisters on whatever it was on. And I know Indiana, you get them there, don't you?
Sometimes, yeah. We've had a few scares over the last few months coming into this. So it's been close.
Yeah. We think about all our Midwest friends during all of those kind of calamities that y'all get there. Yeah. So, Mark, we're delighted to have you with us, and we're going to be talking about three of Mark's books. I'm going to hold up two of the Arthur Nakai series, which we'll be touching on tonight, and then in depth, we'll be talking about his newest book, and you, dear readers, listeners that are along for the ride, you are going to hear about a book not yet, and there's a book. There's another book from the series. Thank you, Mark. And then in the second half of the show, we are going to talk about a book not yet published and how privileged we were to get to read it and to be able to talk about it tonight with you, Mark. We're so delighted. So we're going to get started. Jim has a little bio. Yeah. And then we'll get right into discussion.
All right. Mark Edward Langley is a multi-award-winning author of the Arthur Nakai Mysteries and the New Sky Roanhouse novels. He is currently working on the fourth novel of the Arthur Nakai series and the second novel of the new, not yet published, Sky Roanhouse series. Mark and his wife, Barbara, divide their time between Northwest Indiana, where he is right now, and the city of Santa Fe, New Mexico. Welcome, Mark.
Yeah, Santa Fe, our neighbor, about an hour to the, I guess, north?
An hour to the north of us.
And you know, when we get into the Sky Roanhouse book, which we'll do in a little bit, I just love that so many of the settings, it's like, oh, we've been there. Oh, we know where that burger place and lots of burger.
But there are a couple of places where they think, where in the heck is he?
That? Yeah.
I'm glad you can enjoy it.
It's one of the fun things for readers when they read about something that they know. So Mark, why don't we just kind of get started getting to know you a little bit? Will you share a little bit about your background and your writing background?
Oh, geez. At this point, I began thinking about this over 30 years ago, you know, and I used to read a lot of Tony Hillerman way back then. And I started thinking to myself, you know, I loved his books and I loved, you know, reading them. And I'm thinking maybe I could do this one day, you know, and, you know, things get in the way. Like John Lennon said, life is what happens while you're busy making plans. And I had planned to do things, and then, you know, you meet someone, you get married, and things go from there, and you have a job and have to do all these, juggle these different things. So you do things, you start things, put it aside, go back to it every now and then over the years. And then finally, I think at the end of 2016, I retired at the end of that year. My wife retired that year. And I said, I'm going to try this. I'm going to see if I can get this going, you know. And if I can't, then I'll just, you know, find a job delivering parts for auto parts store or something. Who knows, you know. But I got it all ready to go, and I sent some chapters off to about 17 different agents, and then one ended up calling me from New York, and he took me on, and then 2 weeks after that, I had a 2-book deal. So dreams happen.
Yeah. That he took me just... You want to ask about that?
Yeah, you did take one. Actually, you did a lot of research, and you recorded some things too, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. For that first book, I took a vacation for 2 weeks out to the Southwest and West, and to the point where my boss was thinking I wasn't going to come back.
I keep on guessing.
The vice president came down, and he actually asked my manager at the building there, he says, did he come back? And he goes, why don't you ask him? He's over there. I did that. And I ended up taking a Panasonic tape recorder with me. And then I recorded things I saw, smelled, heard, the whole nine yards from the path it starts in the book in Farmington up to the mountains of Montana, so I could come back home and then just start transcribing everything down. And then went into trying to get everything, developing characters, backstories, and so forth to get started. And Path of the Dead went through probably 7, 8, maybe 10 revisions to get the book where I wanted it before I actually submitted it.
Yeah. You know, before we take our first break, I would love it if you could also share a little bit about, do you have a favorite time of day that you like to write? Do you have a favorite chair or place? Tell us just a little bit about what goes on when you're creating.
Well, I talk with a lot of other writers on, social media, and they always ask, do you like to have music on? Do you like not to have music on? Pure quiet, whatever, you know? And I'm pretty much... apologize for my voice tonight. I'm pretty much akin to whatever puts me in the mood that I'm looking for that particular time is what I'll use. I mean, it could be anywhere from the soundtrack album to Body Heat or, Pink Floyd, as far as things go, whatever gets me in that creative thought process, and, I've done a lot of writing to Pink Floyd, so yeah.
Yeah, wow, that's so interesting. Do you have a quick tip for a writer of any kind?
Oh boy,
I know that's a tough one.
Yeah, as far as I'm not even sure what it's going to qualify as that, but it's just again, write what you love, and mm-hmm. make sure if you don't know a lot of things. Research as much as you can, go to the library or wherever it may be, go online, search newspaper articles, whatever it may be you need, to get that initial thing. Now, one thing about my stuff is, unlike Ann, who's out there all the time, I go out there every now and then, but in every place that I write about, I have been where that is.
Ah.
So it's not something you look up on Google and figure out, but to get that feel and the way I write about it, you have to be there, So it's all the back roads and so forth and things. That's what I've been doing. And I just, being out there is the best thing ever in the world for me.
When you made your trip out west, had you written anything of the manuscript for the first book?
Nope, not at all, because I was just out there getting the idea of where I knew what I wanted to do, what I wanted to write about. But I had to go out there to be in the area to get every little nook and cranny down that I could, which my original editor for Blackstone said, your book is good. I'll tell you one thing. You're too much like a travelogue.
But we like that.
You tighten this up here, tighten that up there. give a little information here, a little information there. And it worked out really well. But I as I've gone on now for the last 6 years, you know, it's like, yeah, I see what he meant. And I try to write more concise. His point is that when Silence Screams, I had somebody read it as far as being going for a film or a something like that. And they said that it was, the book itself was so well written and concise, it'd be a shame to truncate it even more and make it a, you know, half hour and a half film. It'd be better off as a limited series. So you get all the aspect in. And I like that aspect too. That's, I hope that's what happens.
Yeah. Go ahead. You have a question. Go ahead.
Which was it? Well, you read these books before, right?
Yes.
What was the first book? You know,
Hold up the first book because he has the first book, Path of the Dead.
Path of the Dead. Okay.
Yeah. You know, Mark, can you hold that thought and we'll take our first Blue Cottage?
No,
we're going to go ahead and we'd love to hear from one of our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency. Find out what this fabulous Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison can do for you if you are a writer. And then, Mark, when we come back, we're getting into the Arthur Nakai series. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with more with Mark. Stay tuned. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking with Mark Edward Langley. Well, sometimes I miss a little name.
I know. You know? And we have the three books that we're showing to
and
the
particularly
screen.
The first one, The Path of the Dead.
Yes.
You want to talk a little about the inspiration? Was the inspiration to do a whole series, you know? Maybe it's a little review question. Or were you just going to write one book and it kind of went from there?
Actually, I had thought about making it a series. And in fact, as I went thinking about the plot line and the storyline for the first book, I had, I think at the time, 8 other titles thought of, and then outlines for each one of those. Like with the Sky Roan Horse, the first one's done. I'm halfway through the second one, but I have like 5 more outlines and titles for those two. So I'm thinking both along the lines of going to be series work.
Yeah. So Arthur Nakai, what a character. We see some, you know, like with every series, sometimes you see some characters grow and maybe not all, or maybe the author doesn't really grow a character over a series. I found that Arthur does go through some things through these books. Would you just tell us a little bit about Arthur? Who is he? What does he do? And what can we expect?
Well, I mean, yeah, Arthur Nakai, which is funny because I gave him the name of Arthur because it was a native friend of mine here when I worked in the one place before, and he was great. So I had him. I love, you know, Carlos Nakai on the flute. So I put them both together, and there you go. I have Nakai playing on the stereo while I'm writing too sometimes. But yeah, so Arthur is spent 10 years in the Marines. He was 12 years with CPP as Border Patrol, and now he runs his own business, which is a White Mesa Outfitters north of Farmington, New Mexico, and just gets into certain things. And his wife, Sharon, works for KZRV News, and they work together sometimes on a couple different parts of the stories. But their main thing to me, and that's the one thread that goes through all the three books so far and into the fourth and the rest of them too, is that they're a couple that any couple could probably relate to, and the fact that it's been 2 years in the first book and they're still trying to come back from the stillbirth, of their first child, a son. Mm-hmm. And that weighs on them, trying to navigate that emotional act right there, just dealing with all that and getting back to somewhat normalcy throughout the books. That's the one strand that runs through all of them.
Yeah. I think Arthur is one of those guys, characters that every guy would like to be and every woman would like to have in her life.
Oh, my goodness.
I appreciate that.
You know, you say he runs an outfitter company?
Yeah, yeah. Backcountry horse rides and all, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you and Bobby talked about these books before on the writer's block, but I haven't had a chance to read them. So I think about this Arthur character. He's running an outfitter company, but is he a little bit of a detective too? Or
yeah, because of his time in the Marines and his CBP stuff, he has a lot of skills that a lot of people don't have, you know. So when it comes to things like in the second and third books, people on the reservation and around there come to him when they can't get the results they want from somebody else. Okay. And with the first book, that's who draws him into the second book, and somebody comes to see him in the third book, and it goes on and on. But yeah, he works on what he knows. He does what he knows best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is the theme of the main story of Path of the Dead?
Yeah, let's just talk about Path of the Dead for a moment. Kind of, what's that storyline?
Well, that one there is, Sharon's out doing a live, getting ready to do a live shot from somewhere and stop off somewhere. Meantime, she ends up being kidnapped by a serial killer that escaped takes her hostage, and that's how both of them go from New Mexico to Montana. And then Arthur is set up with the FBI trying to do what they can do, you know, and then decides to take it among himself to go after him and try to find him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's all three of these books, dear reader, all of three of these books are page turners. And what happens next? And your serial killer, actually the bad element in every one of these books is so horrifically horrible that we really hope that Arthur is going to do him in.
Real quick, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's what you want. You want a character that people love to hate. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Bobby and I were discussing, When Silence Screams.
When Silence Screams.
And
particularly
how bad the guy is. Bobby, so I thought, this guy must be something. So
actually, that character in there was based on the internet's first serial killer back in the 80s. So the things that happen in there are what he actually did in real life.
Yeah. And you know, Mark, when I was revisiting this book, we were on a train. We had a 24-hour train trip, two days, and then we had a couple days visiting, and then we were back on the train. And, they tell you lights out, the little overhead at like 10 o'clock, everybody's supposed to be quiet and all that. And I did take my light out, but I had this on my Kindle, and I just like read this all night long.
You have any nightmares?
Well, that's how riveting this story is. And you touch on a very important, each book has an important theme also, but this book, When Silence Screams, when I read this the first time, I had not heard of the MMWI. I was not familiar with that term. And you talk about it a lot in this book. You want to chat about that for a moment?
That's one of the things that got me started with that. And the strange thing is that I thought of the title before I thought about discovered that. And it started me back in, I think, actually 2016 when I found out, or 2018, something like that in 2016, 5,712 girls and women went missing on the reservations in the United States and Canada. So I delved more into that And I ended up on the MMIW site, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, and saw all of the flyers on there of all of the girls and women. And when you see that number, 5,712, it's an enormous number. But to make it real and you think about it, I printed out most of all those flyers, and every number had a name, had a face, had an age, you know, and all these things in their history. And when you realize that when this happens to anybody, has this happened to them, every future from there on is gone. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no birthdays to celebrate. There's no weddings. There's no children. And all these things that can happen never happen, you know. And I started thinking about that and watched a lot of interviews online there and got in touch with one woman who actually told me her backstory. And I made her backstory the backstory of the woman that runs the Albuquerque Shelter for Women in the book. And so what you're reading there is the truth.
Yeah. And Mark, you know, when I read this the first time, I was not familiar with the term. I hadn't seen, you know, no detective shows were using it as a theme. It wasn't really. And ever since that time, it seems to me like you brought to the forefront something that certainly a lot of Indigenous people knew about, but the mainstream, we didn't know.
Right.
We didn't know. And it's so important that we understand this horrible, horrible situation.
We know. We're kind of talking. Excuse me, Mark. We're kind of talking about it. And I know we had just a slight bit of conversation Anna Hillman last week on this subject, and some of the other Western authors do bring it up. And you're right, we haven't really been known about it too much, but is anything being done about it? I guess I kind of feel like we're talking about it, but nothing's happening. It continues and continues and continues.
Oh yeah. It's one of those things that book came out in 2021, and that was among one of the first ones to come out and talk about this. And then since then you see this gigantic swell up of television shows about this and documentaries about this and all these kind of things, you know. And this book has been out there all along discussing the same kind of thing. And it's, to me, it's more than that aspect of it as well, because it's like, you know, saying it's more about that than the mystery that it is of where did she go, where is she now? Is he going to find her in time and so forth? You know, you know, to me, it's like saying that like 50 Shades of Grey was just about sex, but it wasn't. And if you analyze that book and movie, it's about how love can change somebody for the better. You know, with that, this poor girl gets hooked up on a false profile online. And then while her parents are down at the Palace of Governors selling all their handmade jewelry and so forth, she wanders off to get ice cream, doesn't come back.
Yeah.
That's how it started. So
that's how it started.
And the mystery is, who took her? Where did she go? What's she doing? And will he find her?
Mm-hmm. We are, the time is going so quickly, Mark, and we want to get to the next book we're going to talk about. So we're going to step away. And we are going to tell you about one of the places that you can get Mark's books, as well as the books of many of our featured authors. And that is the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, Mark, it's all about Sky Roanhorse. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com. Find books and CDs on the menu. Choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer with Mark Langley. We've been talking about a series of books here, Arthur and the Kai, and now we're going to move on to Sky Roanhorse. And this is going to be a new series, I think.
It is going to be a new series. Oh, my gosh, Mark. Thank you for sending us the PDF and allowing us. It's such a privilege to get to read this book in advance of the worldwide readers that are going to enjoy it in the future. So tell us about Sky Roanhorse, the character, and a little bit about the series, and then we're going to talk about it in greater depth. Get us started.
Well, yeah, Sky, you know, is a wonderful character to write. I thought about him, and I kind of just conceived the thought of him. And I wanted to find out, before I did anything, if there was a character like him. I didn't want to be, you know, a sheriff in a town. I didn't want to be a park ranger kind of guy and whatever else. But I wanted to find something that wasn't being done. So I set upon the New Mexico Livestock Board Inspector, you know, and there wasn't anything out there with that kind of character that had the leeway that he would have, you know, because Sky had gone through a bad part in his life, you know, where he had pulled some, got behind a car and was off the side of the road thinking something may have happened and so forth. But it was the way the book starts out in a nightmare for him. He ended up getting involved in an officer involved shooting that pretty much almost killed a woman in the story there. And just spiraled out of control, lost his job, lost his family, you know, lost himself pretty much, until a year or so later, he was pulled out of all that by one of his friends, Troy Riggs, who was the deputy director of the livestock board, and pulled him up, helped him out, got him a job, got him back on his feet, you know. So they're still much more friends as they have been, but that character is just, I love him. And I love Minnie, you know, it's just a friend that comes to be his girlfriend. It's just, it's one of those things that's fantastic. And when you hit that, you just know that this is how it's going to be, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he moves on from me. I guess he's with the state police. And then after he kind of gets his life to get back together, and Riggs definitely helps him do that. He puts him into the New Mexico Livestock Board. But he also keeps his foot. I thought it was kind of interesting the way you wrote the book. He keeps his foot in the law enforcement part. So he can kind of works two worlds. He's a detective, he's a policeman, and he's a, I couldn't call him necessarily a brand manager, but he's
multi-talented.
Well, they do have a thing that it is true that livestock inspectors can be cross-certified to work with police. So that's where that came into that aspect of it there, too. So he can get in and do things that other people may not be able to do because he is cross-certified to still work with both.
Yeah. Now, he has an interesting name. Sky is spelled S-K-Y-E. And then last name, Roanhorse, one word. So where does he come from? What's his heritage?
Well, I wanted to make him something that was just a fantastic thing. So he is, genetics is one thing that is the way it is, because it doesn't matter when it comes down to your parents, you're half of one, half of the other. But as far as Sky is, Sky's mother was Scottish, and Sky's father was Navajo. And by the time everything got down to him, his mother's genetics is the one that has, you know, domination over what he is. But he looks like his father. He has the hazel eyes from the mother and so forth, you know. But he's just one of these characters that is fantastic to write. And you to take him the way he is, he's great. And I just love writing him. His story has come along so much in the first book and second book. It's incredible.
Well, he's really a hero type guy.
Yeah, he's, you know, another guy.
He's
yeah.
large and white. You got him 6'2", 240 pounds.
Yeah.
And he's a good guy. He's not a bad guy. And he's pretty well at the point that we're starting to read about him. He's got his head on pretty straight.
Yeah.
And we call him, what's this thing which we call him? An apple?
Yeah, he has a sort of a nickname.
That's been around for decades. Yeah, it's like, you know, you're called an apple because you're red on the outside, white on the inside, you know, And it can be transformative in either culture, you know, and so forth. So that's one thing that you touch on with that. And growing up as he did, trying to, you know, fit in, like a lot of people, you know, I have a person that I am in contact with out there that I talk to a lot, and she's her son was that way, trying to fit in, you know, and get by and make a life. And I think once he gets in the Army and gets straightened out and get things going and turned into police, and so he's already past all that, but he still has a little hindrance in there in the back that he won't stand for anybody, you know, talking to him as if he's not a human being. So
so with him, he travels all over the state. What's his territory? He has
about
10,000 square
miles. Yeah,
square miles. He's
100 miles one direction, 100 in another.
Yeah, and so you have him on the road quite a bit.
Yep.
And yeah,
That's what they do. I wanted to bring into the aspect of, along with this, he does his job, you know, and people might want to see what he does and so forth. So he's off, you know, checking paperwork of cattle and livestock being brought into the state. He's doing, you know, livestock checks at ranches and farms and stuff. He's doing all these job related things that pretty much they tell me is boring every day, you know, because you're doing the same thing all the time, you know. And when it gets to these cases that he's going to fall into, you know, it brings the excitement back of being the sergeant in the state police, you know, and being able to find those little imperceptibles he talks about that other people might not see with less experience.
Yeah. There is one episode where he gets the call, and it may be coming from his boss, who sort of says, hey, there's you got to go. And there's a cow.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you know the episode I'm talking about. So tell us shortly a little bit about that cow episode.
Well, I when I was talking to Sean at MMLB, I said, can you send me any files that have any kind of a mutilation or cattle thing or whatever, you know? And I get this file that comes in from them and pictures the whole nine yards. And what's written is exactly the way it was. You know, you find this poor cow is out in the field, and he's left by a road in the ranch there. And he's dead, of course, you know, but he's left with a whiskey bottle, and his left hoof and leg is over that, you know, like he's been drunk and laying passed out, you know. But those little things, like in the new book as well, things are happening with things that it's just a little bit of comic relief, but it still tells the story of things he does every day. And that's just, I had to write about that and put that in there to show here's some of the crazy things that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. There's bulls that are loose, or there's something without a brand, you know, he's checking, there's no brand. And we learn about what happens when that happens. And so I found all those stories really kind of, you know, fun and interesting. I felt like I'm learning something. Yeah. What did you read that you liked that you learned about you'd never heard about before?
Well, I hadn't heard about Apple before.
That was a new term for us.
But you know, you kind of squared some away for me when it came to stray dogs on reservations. Because I see they'd have dogs and, you know, they wouldn't pay much attention to them. And sometimes they did and sometimes they didn't. And, you know, dogs in our neighborhood, if they're running around, we got a problem. So
in our neighborhood, yeah.
You know, so what? You got a res dog, a stray dog, and a feral dog.
Yeah. What are the differences?
Oh, boy. It's been a while since I've heard this. They always say that, you know, that the one thing he says in the book there that's talked about is that, you know, res dog will choose to stay with you. It's not something that you have to feed and take care of and so forth. They can do that for himself, you know. But that's one. They choose to stay with you if they want to. you know, and it's not a, it's not a kept dog. It's not going to be a dog wearing a funny little outfit, you know, or a cord, a hot dog suit for Halloween or whatever. You know, it's just what it is. And I love that the dog that was in, that's in the book there, is one that was found on the side of the road, and he decided to help him out. Albert did, and the dog ended up staying with him because the dog wanted to stay with him. It didn't need to, but you know, he showed it kindness, so it stayed with him.
Another term that was new to us that becomes very important to the story is a bush race.
Bush race. We hadn't heard that before either.
Yeah, it's not a Kentucky Derby race.
Far from it. Yeah, those are bush races are illegal horse racing. Sometimes just off in the desert somewhere. You know, there's been people who actually have owned land there, and they will sponsor them. And then sometimes, and it's been recorded that sometimes even local police will be there to guard all the stuff that's there, even though it is an illegal event. But the horses are treated very badly. I mean, they are kept badly. They're shot up with a bunch of different drugs to try to get the edge. And if one dies, one dies. No one cares, you know. But I wanted to put that in to show the difference of why Arthur should care, or why other people care about that. Like the owner of the stable that trains horses and so forth. It's a bad situation.
Yeah.
Not talked about, but you can find things online describing it and talking about it. Reports on news out there giving reports about it and talking about how they picked him up or stopped him or just missed him or whatever, you know. But it's a real thing. Yeah, they still do bush races in the dead of night. Yeah.
Wow. There's a couple characters. Well, let's see. Well, we don't want to do any spoiler alerts, but if you enjoy mysteries, there are three deaths that have to get solved. And we'll just say that about that.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about what maybe I don't want to say Stillwater. I don't know why. Minnie Stillwell. Tell us a little bit about Minnie Stillwell.
Minnie likes to use the word sugar.
Sugar. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to start doing that. Hey, sugar.
Yeah. She's somebody that has a mind of her own. She is a sassy waitress with an MBA, you know, because she used to work in a big job in the city. And once all the college graduates started coming in, thinking they knew more than her and her 25 years experience, she got tired of that and left and decided she'd do what she wanted to do, and ended up being happy just being a waitress in Las Lunas, New Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah, is that a real the broken elk grill and bar? No, Oaken.
The drunken elk. Yeah.
Is that a real place?
No, that's because I thought of that a long time ago, because things you pull from in your past when you start to do things. There was a local establishment around here that had a logo similar to that of a, you know, elk dropping, drinking back a, knocking back a bottle of beer, you know. Yeah. So I thought, my first thought was the drunken elk, you know.
There you go.
Took that idea and used that later when I started writing this book here, because every place has to have some place that some of the characters will go and kind of hang out and do whatever, you know. And that seemed the perfect place.
Yeah, it is.
He worked there constantly over the years of him being there, trying to, you know, work her way into his life and so forth. And then it just finally happened. So, yeah, but Drunken Elk's a great place.
It is a great place. You want to ask your favorite character question?
Well, we know you got control of all these folks, you know. And you got a very group of folks here that you weaved into the woven of the story. But did any of them ever surprise you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they do things sometimes that you don't think about. And I'm sure every writer can tell you the same situation. You know, if you want to understand that, then I say watch the movie about Charles Dickens, The Man Who Invented Christmas, you know, because that's how your characters talk to you, you know. And I'll have things already planned out, know what I want to do, know what I want to say, how the conversation is going to go. And then inevitably, it'll almost be like the character go, I wouldn't say that. I think I want to say this. Better than what you thought of, you know. So and it's, I was watching that movie and going, yep, I can see him sitting over here. I can see him sitting over there, her sitting over here, you know. Just saying, I don't think you have that quite right, you know, yeah. But it works because they will have ideas that I wouldn't have thought of. And yeah, conversations will change once you're in it and it's just playing out in your head. You're just typing away.
One of my favorite conversations was between Norm Sykes and Sky. And they talk about Gene Autry and Champion. And it was like, Mark, I felt like he wrote that just for me. He put that in there just for Bobby Bell.
Well, how did you know, Gene? Oh, that was, like I was saying, my dad loved Gene Autry when he was a kid and told me all about him. I watched him when I was a kid growing up, you know. And it's just one of those things I thought, this guy being the age he is, this would be something that anybody in that age group or whatever would think about, but people would understand maybe this kind of connection, you know. Yeah. And just the fact that he and the Horth are both old, getting toward the end of their lives at some point, you know, and him talking about that, well, if he dies, he hopes the horse dies right after him or vice versa, so they can ride up to heaven together, you know. I just thought it was great. I thought it was great to have that be said, because when you have, I don't have a horse, I'd love to have a horse, but it's kind of like a boat. I would guess your best day is when you get one. The best day else is when you get rid of it, you know. But I'd love to have that kind of connection with an animal. My dog, yeah, my dog is great, you know. But when you have a connection with a creature, it's like, this is what happens. You live for that. You want that. And this is what he wants to think about going to happen. Yeah. It's going to happen, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Mark, we're going to step away for one last ad. This is another sponsor we want to thank. And that is our own Western business, outwestshop.com. When we come back, Mark's going to tell us what's he working on next and where you can find him. So stay tuned. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out outwestshop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Honor with the Writer. Special guest, Mark Langley. We're holding up a couple of books. Did we already talk about those books?
These are the Arthur Nakai series we're holding up. Yes. And looking forward to eventually having a JPEG of the cover, the new cover coming. So,
we've been talking about Sky Run.
Yeah.
And we're talking about book one, maybe. Is there a book two?
Yeah. What's happening next?
Actually, right now I'm in the middle of two novels. Book four for Arthur Nakai called Man in the Maze, and then book two of Sky called Deadfall.
Great. Okay. Great. Where can people find you, Mark?
Oh, my website, markedbertlangley.com. Anywhere on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, the whole nine yards, you know. I think there may be some links to them on my website for that. You can buy books through the website. I'll be glad to autograph them, mail them out to you, you know. Or you can any bookstore, you know, Barnes & Noble and so forth, wherever they sell books.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a great website. There are lots of links to podcasts, and I'm sure this one will go up there too when you have a chance. It's really, really, really a great website. Jim, do you have a quote or two from the book?
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. Those guys. Yeah. I think we got time for both of them. They're kind of almost passages as opposed to quotes. One of them is Seraph of Sky. He's going through Albert's trailer. Albert has been become a victim here, and he has a very, very cluttered trailer.
Oh, my gosh. Does he ever?
The task of finding a viable clue, he resolved, would be as difficult as locating a horse's hoofprint in the churned-up earth left behind by a herd of stampeding buffalo. The tragic disarray of the trailer brought back memories of his college days, though. In his recollection, the dorm room he and his roommate shared was never this bad. You just had to keep it clean enough for the co-eds. And then he's talking, this guy's talking with his boss, Troy Riggs, and he's talking about, we're talking about daughters in general, and particularly Sky's worried about his daughter. Sky sat back in the chair. As far as I know, Amy's in sixth grade and doesn't ever want to talk to me again. She even unfriended me on social media. And Riggs says, she'll grow out of that, he assured him. And then Sky says, somehow I think you're full of it. And Riggs says, well, okay, I may very well be, but daughters have a way of always loving their fathers no matter what struggles he goes through or how badly they think they hate him. And daughters are always daddy's little girl, no matter how old they are, how hard they rebel, or how many idiots they date. You're her protector. I've known you forever, my friend. You've never said anything against her, but God help anyone that does. He paused. I'm telling you, no matter how she may feel now, she will always love you. We thought those passages were pretty good.
Daddies and daughters, they play a role in this book.
Yep. Yeah. Well, my daughter's 45. So yeah, you know, it's it always she's still little. So
well, you know, I didn't mention this to Bobby when I read that passage. I knew it could only be written by somebody who had a daughter.
Yeah.
Oh so. Yeah. Yeah. And I got two 5-year-old grandkids too. So yeah, granddaughter.
Yes, you do. Yeah, lots of things that she'll be writing about down the road, I'm sure, that'll find their way into writing. Well, Mark, we really want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. It was just great fun to catch up with you again after a long hiatus of not talking to you. And we're so excited about this new book coming out, Bloodlines, a Sky Roan Horse novel. Please keep in touch with us. Don't go away. You're with us till the end. But please, Mark, as more comes out about that novel, you need to keep us in touch with what's happening. Next week, Scott McCrae joins us. Now, Scott was with us a couple of months ago regarding a short story that he'd written in an anthology. Now he's back to talk about his latest thriller, and it is a page-turner, called Targets West. It's just been out a few weeks, and it is having to great acclaim, and it's really fun. It's a thriller, but you laugh too. It's a really, really wonderful. So join us next week with Scott. Tonight was episode number 134. So if you go looking for it, Rendezvous with a Writer Facebook page, the LA Talk Radio Facebook page, our website at outwestshop.com. You can find it under live. And then again, shortly on Amazon, Spotify, and all those places. And we would love it if you leave a comment. Tell us what you think, or maybe you have a question for Mark. Goodness. And oh, who has just joined us on screen, Mark?
That's my dog, my Lady Cora, right here.
Oh, what a cutie.
She came downstairs wondering where I was.
I'm sure. Well, again, thank you so much, everybody, for being with us tonight. And you have a parting thought?
You. As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing, and we'll keep reading.
Listening and listening.
We'll see you next week. Thank you, Mark. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll thank you. Bye.